The first time I used the word honor like a signature, I didn't feel like a liar. It was a Tuesday, rain rinsing the city clean, the kind of weather that makes men in expensive coats look repentant. I watched the woman across my desk fold her hands so carefully it looked rehearsed. Her wedding ring caught the light like it was still trying to be seen. She kept glancing at the leather folder I'd placed between us, as if it might bite. "It's not debt," I told her, soft as confession. "It's a bridge. A temporary measure. A private arrangement." She swallowed, and I watched her throat move with the precision of a clock hand. "What's the collateral?" she asked. I didn't say property. I didn't say stocks. I didn't say the townhouse that smelled like old money and lemon polish. I didn't say any of the things people usually pawn when they pretend they are desperate. I slid the folder closer. "Family honor," I said, and smiled like I just offered her something noble. Outside, the rain kept falling, as if the world was washing its hands. Inside, I waited for the moment she realized she couldn't afford to say no, because she'd already started believing this was the only way to keep the story clean. And when she signed, her pen didn't shake. Mine didn't either. The Legacy Fund was never meant to sound like a business. It was meant to sound like a tradition. That was the first lesson I learned when I moved from compliance at a regional bank into private risk advisory, which is what we called ourselves because it kept everyone from saying what we really did. We bought silence, curated narratives, and packaged dignity into something you could finance. My office had no logo on the door. The building directory didn't list our suite. Even the elevator felt like it was in on it. No chime, no announcement, just a smooth ascent into a hallway that smelt like cedar and expensive restraint. People relaxed when they stepped into a space that looked like it could forgive them. The pitch was simple. Families with reputations didn't need loans. They needed solutions that left no fingerprints. They came to me after the incident, never before it. After the drunk video. After the leaked email. After the misunderstanding at a gala. After the hush money that wasn't hush money because no one used that word. They came with faces that had practiced smiling in portraits and hands that had never known the humiliation of asking for help. And I gave them a different kind of help. I would place a folder on the desk, always the same leather, always the same weight, heavy enough to feel like responsibility, not so heavy it felt like a trap. Inside were the terms, a line of private funding, a legal structure that looked like philanthropy, a schedule of reputation maintenance services that sounded like consulting. What made it work wasn't the money. Money is crude. Money is easy to insult. What made it work was the collateral. Most families had assets tied up in trusts, foundations, properties with names carved into stone. Liquidating anything would be noticed. It would start rumors. It would invite questions. The whole point was to solve the problem without making a second one. So we offered a cleaner payment. We offered a thing they guarded more fiercely than their accounts, their standing. When I said family honor, I didn't mean it poetically. I meant it contractually, a set of obligations that couldn't be measured by the IRS or appraised by a realtor. A promise that if they breached our terms, if they spoke out, if they backed out, if they tried to take the solution and refused the price, we had a mechanism to make their world collapse in a way that looked self-inflicted. They didn't ask how. They didn't want to. The first irreversible moment always happened early. It had to. The longer someone hovered at the edge of the cliff, the more likely they were to step back. So within the first meeting, I'd ask for a small thing that felt harmless. A signature authorizing an independent review. A consent to access public and private records. A list of names, advisors, board members, donors, family friends, so we could coordinate messaging. People handed me their circles like they were handing me their wallets. And once I had the names, I had the map. After that, it was easy to call it protection. Easy to call it stewardship. Easy to look at the gratitude in their eyes and pretend it wasn't worship. The woman from the rainstorm, Marianne, was married into an old family with a summer house that had its own nickname in the papers. Her husband had been caught in a photo that wasn't illegal, not exactly, but it was humiliating, and humiliation was the fastest way to turn a family into a fire. She told me she needed it to go away. I told her it could. I told her the fund would front the cost of containment, but the agreement required a bond. What bond? She asked, and there it was, the moment where she needed to be convinced that the price was spiritual, not financial. I leaned forward. Honor, I said, not as a concept, as a pledge. Her eyes flicked to the window, to the rain, to the world outside that didn't know her name yet. Who decides what that means? She whispered. I didn't answer with power. I answered with comfort. Your family does, I said. We just keep the record. And when she signed, I felt the familiar warmth of a door closing behind someone. Containment always looked like kindness at first. We didn't threaten people. We didn't raise our voices. We never needed to. Our leverage lived in the paperwork, in the quiet permissions people granted when they were afraid of being talked about. Moran's situation unfolded exactly as predicted. A flurry of calls, a discreet settlement, a rewarded statement from a family representative, a friendly journalist offered an alternate story that tasted sweeter than the truth. The photo vanished from feeds like it had never existed, swallowed by algorithms and fatigue. She sent me a thank you note, in elegant handwriting. She called me a guardian. I kept it in my drawer, not because I cared about gratitude, but because it reminded me how easily relief can be mistaken for loyalty. Then came the second phase, the one families didn't understand until they were already inside it, maintenance. Honor isn't a one-time payment, it's a subscription. We scheduled check-ins, we reviewed guest lists, we flagged high-risk contacts, we suggested which board meetings someone should miss for the sake of optics, we drafted apology language for things that hadn't happened yet, just in case. At first, the family treated it like insurance, something you pay for and then forget. But the fund wasn't built to be forgotten. We needed small breaches to prove we were necessary. Not scandals, those were expensive. Just little tremors, a rumor that spread in the right rooms, a donor who paused, a friend who stopped returning calls. Friction, delivered gently, like sand in a watch. I would sit in Marianne's living room, surrounded by heirlooms arranged like a museum of restraint, and I'd point out threats as if I'd discovered them, as if they weren't already implied by the permissions she'd signed. Someone's talking, I'd say. Not widely, yet. Her face would tighten. Who? She'd ask. I'd shrug, always careful, always vague. Specificity makes people feel they can fix something. Ambiguity makes them cling. We'll handle it, I promise. But we need your cooperation. Cooperation was the real currency. It meant introducing me to her sister-in-law, who chaired a charity. It meant persuading her husband to step down from a committee temporarily, which turned permanent once the replacement enjoyed the seat. It meant moving family money into structures we controlled because the paperwork made it look like best practice, like discretion, like maturity. I told myself I was helping them streamline. I told myself the family would thank me later, when they looked back and saw how clean their fall could have been. The irreversible moments stacked quietly. A resignation letter. A trust amendment. A donor call made with the wrong tone at the wrong time so that someone needed us to smooth it over. Each action looked separate, harmless, a reasonable response to circumstance. But circumstance was something we curated. The part I liked most, what I justified most easily, was how the fund made people behave. They stopped yelling. They stopped making scenes. They stopped airing grievances in public. They stopped making the kind of mistakes that turn families into jokes. In my mind, the fund didn't just protect reputations, it improved them. It refined people. Then I got my first sign that refinement and restraint weren't the same thing. Marianne called me at midnight. Her voice was raw, stripped of that polished softness. I won out, she said. I didn't panic. I didn't even sit up fully. I'd heard it before, the late night revolt, the desperate need to believe there was an exit. You're tired, I told her. I read the paperwork, she said. The bond, a pledge, the terms. It's not what you said. My mouth went dry, not from fear, but from irritation. People hated discovering that comfort had fine print. It's standard, I said. It says if I breach, if I talk, if I try to leave, then, her breath hitched, then the record is released. The record. That was our masterpiece, a sealed dossier of honor statements families provided as collateral, written confessions, admissions, acknowledgments of impropriety, not crimes, necessarily, just enough truth to ruin the kind of life that survives on being untarnished. We framed it as accountability. We called it integrity. We told families it was a way to ensure everyone behaved with dignity. In reality, it was a cage made of their own words. Marianne's voice shook. You made me write it. I asked you to, I corrected gently. Correction is important. It makes someone feel responsible. You said it would stay private. It will, I said, as long as the agreement holds. Silence on the line, and in that silence I felt her calculation. What is a life worth if the story becomes public? Finally, what do you want from me? That question always arrived eventually. It sounded like surrender, but it was more than that. It was the moment someone accepted that the problem wasn't the scandal. The problem was us. And when she asked, I felt the familiar warmth again. We want you safe, I said. We want the family safe. I listened to her breathing slow, the way people calm down when they convince themselves captivity is protection. Then, because I learned the value of closing doors quickly, I added one more small request. Tomorrow, I said, I need you to bring me the old letters, the ones your father kept, the ones no one's seen. There was a pause, tiny, fragile. Then, okay. And I slept like someone who believed he was preserving a legacy. The letters smelled like dust and perfume and time. Marianne handed me the box in the same living room where she kept her family photos, framed faces smiling as if history had always been kind. The cardboard was worn at the edges, softened from being moved, but never opened. People love keeping secrets, as long as they don't have to touch them. These stay private, she said, her voice flat with effort. They're safer with us, I replied, and meant it, the way a priest means confession belongs in the booth. Top, I took the box back to the office and set it on my desk like a trophy. I didn't name. My assistant asked if it needed logging. I said yes. Everything needed logging. A thing unrecorded is a thing that can escape. When I opened the box, I expected old betrayals, affairs, hidden accounts, the kind of rot families hide beneath polished names. It was never the crimes that destroyed them. It was the contradiction, the gap between the story and the truth. But the first envelope I pulled wasn't addressed to Marianne's father. It was addressed to mine. My last name, written in the same elegant hand Marianne used in her thank you note. I stared at it until my eyes began to ache, until my mind tried to explain it away with coincidence. There are only so many ways to write a name, only so many hands, only so many families. Then I opened it. Inside was a single page, clean, formal, and devastatingly familiar in structure. A pledge. A statement of honor. The language was ours. The phrasing, the cadence, the careful way it framed disgrace as responsibility. It read like one of the documents I slid across my desk every day, except the signature at the bottom was my father's. I felt something cold move through my ribs. I flipped through the box, my hands suddenly clumsy, tearing at envelopes as if speed could change what I was about to find. War. A series of pledges, dated years before I joined the fund, all signed by members of my family. My aunt, my uncle, my older cousin who stopped coming to Thanksgiving and no one would say why. Each page was a confession of something socially lethal, an admission of impropriety, a quiet betrayal, a moment of weakness framed as accountability. Each page had a clause. Release triggered upon breach. The same clause Marianne had read at midnight. My mind scrambled for an explanation that preserved my identity. Maybe another firm had used similar templates. Maybe my father had written these for someone else. Maybe the fund had borrowed language from a common industry source. Then I saw the footer code in the corner of the page. Our internal indexing format. I knew it the way I knew my own handwriting. I sat back, the air in my office suddenly thin, and I remembered my first day at the fund, how the senior partner had welcomed me with that practiced warmth, how he'd said my background made me trustworthy, how he'd mentioned my father's commitment to discretion as if it was a compliment, how easily I'd accepted it. I'd thought I'd earned my place. I'd thought I'd climbed into an exclusive world because I was smart enough to speak its language. But honor wasn't the collateral I'd invented. It was the collateral I'd inherited. The legacy fund wasn't a tool I wielded. It was a structure my family had been living inside long before I walked into that cedar-scented hallway. And the worst part, the part that made my throat tighten until swallowing felt like trying to swallow glass, was the realization that I recognized some of the improprieties my father had confessed to, not from rumor, but from memory. Small incidents that had been explained away when I was younger, a resignation framed as health, a friend who stopped visiting, a sudden move, the public apology for something no one could quite name. These weren't confessions made freely. They were payments. I had been raised in a house where the story was curated so well, I never noticed the hands shaping it. I stared at the letters until the words blurred, and something inside me tried to recoil, tried to become a man who could be shocked. But shock is a luxury. The people who live on reputation learn that quickly. My phone buzzed. A message from the senior partner. Good work securing the archive. Log it under your family file. My family file. I read the line again, slower, as if changing the pace could change the meaning. Then another message arrived. This one from Marianne, short and neat. Please tell me it's over. I looked at the box on my desk, at the pages that proved my bloodline had been collateral, long before I started selling collateral to others. I thought of every folder I'd slid across a desk with a soft voice and clean hands. I thought of how I'd said, "Your family decides what honor means. We just keep the record." I had believed that. I still wanted to believe that. But belief isn't the same as truth. Belief is just what feels safe enough to hold. The realization didn't arrive like a scream. It arrived like a ledger closing. I wasn't the man who built the cage. I was the man trained to maintain it. And somewhere, quietly, in a file I had never been allowed to see until now, my own signature was already waiting, because at some point, without noticing, I'd started living by the same terms. I opened my drawer and took out Marianne's thank you note. "Guardian," she called me. My hand shook for the first time, not from fear of exposure, but from the sickening understanding that I had mistaken containment for care. I typed back to Marianne with the calm of a professional. "Not yet," I wrote, "but it can be." And as I hit send, I felt the cage tighten, not around her, but around the part of me that still wanted to pretend I was different. Because the legacy fund doesn't take money first. It takes the story. Then it teaches everyone inside it how to keep smiling while it owns them.